This is the Wintrust Business Lunch Mondays. Elise Gling joins us. At least she used to, but now here she is again. Hi, Elise. Welcome back.
Hi, John. It's nice to be here. Happy New Year to you and all of our listeners.
We missed you. We almost shut the radio station down.
Oh, well, I'm so glad you didn't.
You want to brag about where you were?
We went hiking in New Zealand. It's a long plane ride away, but once you're there, it's a lovely country.
What was the temperature like there?
It's summer there, but cooler. It's kind of very Chicago-like in a lot of ways. A little humid. Temperatures around 70. At night, it gets into the 40s. Lovely. Just lovely weather.
As I saw a headline, I thought this morning, Australian Open to begin, and I love that tennis tournament. I presume we're talking about the Australian tennis tournament, but the temperature there can just be brutal. And it's always weird because we're freezing our butts off here, and it can be 120 degrees on the tennis courts.
Yes, it's definitely warmer in Australia than almost anywhere. And of course, they've got a huge desert in the middle of that country, which New Zealand doesn't have. New Zealand is a lot of mountains. It's very green. It's a little bit of a combination of England meets Switzerland. It's kind of what it looks like.
What was the highlight for you?
You know, just climbing mountains in places where you don't have Wi-Fi and cell phone service, honestly. We all live really connected lives, and as you know, John, and just the ability to get away and not be able to be in touch is a gift.
One last thing. How was the food?
Food was terrific. I mean, anybody who goes to a wine shop knows that I think half the stuff in there is from California and half is from New Zealand. So I got to sample some really lovely wine. One thing that I think I didn't realize, maybe our listeners are smarter than me, but you know you have a lot of sheep and you know you have a lot of cows in New Zealand. But what you may not know is that they raise deer on farms. And so you drive past, you know, about 5,000 sheep, and then the next pasture has about 3,000 red deer.
Wow. That's funny because I think we are more endeared to deer than we're used to cattle and sheep, you know, and pigs being harvested for the meat. I'm not used to them doing that to deer.
Yeah, I think if you go to Colorado, you'll often see venison. You know, in the West, you'll see venison on the menu. But here, venison is a staple. I mean, venison is something that if you go to somebody's house for a barbecue, they're grilling venison.
Really?
It is. And it's delicious. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to try it or not, but the venison I tried over there a number of times, all of it was absolutely wonderful. And it's low fat and, I don't know, it tasted great.
Just a second ago, you said here. But you're back here now, Elise. You're not in New Zealand anymore.
Sorry, John. You know, I just got back and I've still have jet lag. They're 19 hours ahead. So for most of the trip, it's like being, you know, 5 hours behind. So right now it's 7 a.m. there, but it's tomorrow. It's Tuesday. So I spent a lot of the trip trying to remember what day it was.
Here in Illinois, turns out we're a pretty good place to raise a family, huh?
Yeah, there's a new study out from Wallet Hub. They released it today, and it looks at the best and worst states to raise a family. And what's interesting to start off is the cost of raising a child has now reached over $300,000 just to 18 years old. Does not include college, just from 0 to 18. And so Wallet Hub, they do this every year. They looked at all 50 states across 50 indicators of family friendliness. And some of them are things like median annual family income for the state, housing affordability, healthcare quality, crime rate, school quality. And Illinois ranked number 7th in the state, which I thought was fantastic.
In the country,
In the country for raising kids.
Wow. What's number one?
Number one is Massachusetts, which I thought was really interesting. And I think some of the things that pushed them up is they get an affordability rank of number one. They get an education and child care rank, so the kind of school quality that they have, that's also number one. Health and safety, they're number 5. And they get an 11th best for family fun, because, of course, in Massachusetts, you're about an hour drive from, you know, climbing mountains or skiing in the winter. You've got the ocean, so there's lots of water all around. So they rank pretty high for that as well. And interesting to just kind of kind of see how all the other states. Number two was Minnesota, then North Dakota, Nebraska, New Hampshire, New York, which was interesting because the cost of living is so high in New York.
Well, I would have thought that about Massachusetts, too. I think Boston, and I think that's expensive, but I guess that's not all of Massachusetts, huh?
No, and they also look at things like the percent of families with young children, the infant mortality rank. Again, the median annual family income is pretty high in New York and Massachusetts, so they adjust that for cost of living, but I think that helps push them up. They looked at violent crimes per capita, the percentage of families in poverty, housing affordability. We rank pretty high for that here in the state of Illinois. And the separation and divorce rate. So that all that together is how we rank high. And by the way, 25th would be average, right? That's middle of the country. And we're number seven.
Where does Greenland rank in that?
You know, I think that's there. In next year's
I watched survey. A documentary over the weekend about Greenland. It's beautiful. And but it's ice. And for, you know, many of the winter days, the sun never sets. And, I mean, if ever there was a definition of nice place to visit, wouldn't want to live there, it's Greenland. I guess Iceland maybe, too, but certainly Greenland.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things people think about is they think Greenland is full of green land, right? Lots of forests and things like that. It's just covered with snow and ice most of the year, whereas Iceland actually has more green space, I think, than Greenland does. They're not as their glaciers perhaps have melted faster. They're a little further south. But yes, there's certainly a lot of natural resources in Greenland, and I can understand why some country might want to buy them.
Number one, Massachusetts. That's surprising. I would have guessed that Minnesota would have been high on the best places to raise a family list. It's number
They're number two.
Number two in North Dakota as well. I mean, there's just, except for the weather, it's a lot of good parks and the cost of living is relatively low compared to other places. The resources put into families is very high. I know that. I lived in Minnesota for many years. North Dakota also shares some of those attributes. The problem is in North Dakota, you're in North Dakota. But I guess if you're a kid and you're growing up, what do you care? This is your backyard and you're riding bikes and life is good there. So interesting list from Wallet Hub. We're number seven. Woo woo. Hey, John, this is Ron listening in Lahaina. These wildfires in Los Angeles are horrible, but something to think about is this. Who do you think will get building materials first, Lahaina or Los Angeles? This will only make it much longer to rebuild here in Hawaii. Yeah, I suppose so. I didn't realize they were still that far behind the eight ball in Maui. That was where the fire was that he's referring to, right? We're talking to Elise Glink, Think Glink Media. You can check her stuff out at thinkglink.com. She's also the owner of Best Money Moves. While you were gone, the December jobs numbers came in really hot, as they say. I mean, like 150,000 more jobs than we thought. What are you hearing about that now?
Well, it's interesting. So the December payroll report surged at the end of the year. It was up by 256,000. I think during the course of the Biden administration, there's been over 8 million new jobs created, which has been fantastic. And better than that, we've got income that is above kind of the rate of inflation. So people are starting to catch up a little bit, which is nice. The unemployment rate dropped down to 4.1%. That was a little below expectations. And all of that just means that the Federal Reserve has more of a chance to take a pause in lowering interest rates, which is good and bad, right? I mean, again, everything cuts both ways. If you've got money that's in a savings account, you know, the interest on that's going to be a little bit higher. If you're trying to get a mortgage, oh, that's going to be a little higher too, and that's too bad. In fact, when I look today at what today's mortgage rates are, it's around or a little bit above 7%. And that's for people who have great credit. And I know that that's not everybody, you know, who listens to the show, right? Some people have less than great credit who want to buy a house. But it's interesting to see how jobs have really held up. And perhaps that soft landing is really something that we're going to be able to make stick.
Where are the jobs? What sectors?
Well, it looks like healthcare was up 46,000 jobs. Not a surprise, right? We always need more people in healthcare. Leisure and hospitality, so your hotels, your restaurants, 43,000 people there. Government, not just federal government, but also state and local governments added 33,000, which sounds like a lot, but again, over the, you know, the whole federal government and state and local, it's not that many people here or there. 43,000 people for retail, which was interesting because there's a lot of concern with retail. They were down almost 30,000 jobs in November heading into the holiday shopping season. They made up for it in December. They hired a whole lot of people. And over the course of the year, retail saw payroll growth of about 2.2 million for the full year. Now, that's down from the year before, 3 million in 2023. But 2.2 million, not too bad, particularly for an industry that's seeing it more and more of its industry move out of bricks and mortar stores and more online.
Yeah.
But overall, the bond market said, oh gosh, the Fed is never going to lower interest rates with all this good news. And so they sent interest rates climbing to about 7%. That was the highest in over 6 months.
What about wages? Those inched up a little bit, right?
Yeah, they certainly did. Average hourly increases about 0.3% on the month. That was in line with forecasts. 12 months, the gain is just below 4%. That's a little bit lower than slightly lower than they were expecting, but still really good, right? And if you look at unemployment, we said earlier that the unemployment rate is now 4.1%. You're still near historic lows, right? The historic low is about 3.5%. So one of the Fed governors, and I'm blanking on the name at the moment, said, you know, it could be, maybe it was Austin Goolsbee, our very own homegrown Fed governor, that, you know, it looks like you could be leveling off at this really low level of unemployment, which would be great for the country, right? And when you look at the broadest measure of unemployment, I think it's called the U6. It takes a look at kind of everybody. That moved down to about 7.5%, and that's the lowest since June of 2024, and that's a good number as well. And that takes into account people who aren't really counted in unemployment because they've been unemployed for a really long time.
Yeah.
They're not looking for jobs. They went back to school, living on their parents' couch, those kinds of people.
Still, the 30-year fixed is well above 7%, 7.25%, right?
Yeah, I think that's about where it lands. And again, if you've got anything less than a, 760 on your credit score, you're probably paying something, another quarter of a point higher than that. And that's a real challenge for people who are trying to buy houses, which are now at, higher price points. So I'll just go back to what we were originally talking about. One of the reasons that Chicago is such a great place to live, other than it's such a great place to live, is our lower cost of housing comparatively. And with what's going on in Los Angeles, with all these people now going to be looking for housing, housing shortage there is critical. Before the fires, it's going to be even worse going forward. And for your person in Lahaina, the listener who texted you, every time you have one of these catastrophes where 33,000 or 40,000 homes are destroyed and many, many more damaged, smoke damage causes a lot of problems too. It does take away the amount of people, the talent, the materials that can be made. And for Lahaina, you asked why it's taking so long. They have to ship everything in. They don't make that much stuff in Hawaii. They don't make wallboard in Hawaii, right? That comes in from other places like mainland U.S. And so getting it there is expensive when you can just use it in, say, L.A. or Florida. More of those resources tend to go there.
Are you hearing anything about insurance then as a result of the fire?
It's a disaster. We're going to have a lot to talk about in terms of homeowners insurance. And at the end of the day, I think all of us are going to be like we do when we have hurricanes in Florida or the damage in North Carolina last year. You know, all of us end up paying for that. We have higher, insurance costs across the board. But in, for California, there were so many people who were getting their insurance coverage canceled just before the fires broke out. I'm not sure what that mess is going to look like, but it could be a loss of somewhere over $150 billion, and the vast majority of it may not be covered by insurance.
They have a state program with, my understanding is, some limited funds, and it's not the best insurance. You'll still pay, and it's expensive.
Yep, they have that there. They've had it for earthquakes for a long time in California. Florida has for hurricanes. California is doing it now for forest fires, mudslides, and some of their other catastrophes. But again, that just pushes up pricing for everyone else. The money has to come from somewhere. And I think the amount that we're all going to be paying for insurance, sad to say, is just going to be going up in the next few years.
What was the line? These fires are everybody's fires. These hurricanes are everybody's hurricanes now.
Yeah.
It's the sort of safety net that we've created. But while your house isn't on fire, you're going to help those people rebuild. Elise Glink is the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Check her out at thinklink.com. Welcome back to the U.S. of A. It's good to hear you on the radio, Elise.
Nice to be here, John.
And Jim Dahlke joins us once again, a regular guest, the Director of Communications at TechNexus Venture Collaborative. Welcome back, sir.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
Let's start off talking about the $20 billion plan to build new data centers in the U.S. of A. Is Illinois going to get some of this money?
Yeah, so this is a new proposed plan from the incoming Trump administration. It's, as you mentioned, a $20 billion data center plan. Going to be funded by Hassan Sajwani, a Dubai billionaire businessman, owner of the property development giant Damac Properties. This is going to be a multi-state proposed plan, Illinois among them. So the different states that are going to have access or building these data centers, including Illinois, as well as Indiana, Louisiana, Michigan, Arizona, Ohio, and several others across the Sun Belt, Midwest, and the Southeast. It's a significant move in the sense that this AI boom that we are underway needs computing resources. AI businesses need access to data centers to grow their massively scaling businesses, and these AI centers are a big piece of that. So, we'll see how this plays out as the Trump administration takes effect, but at least as of right now, the plan is to move forward on this $20 billion data center initiative.
You're not clear on how much Illinois is going to get of that?
No, it's not broken out state by state. So it's unclear exactly what piece Illinois is going to get compared to, say, Indiana or Michigan or Ohio, for example. But, it's certainly noteworthy that we're on the short list.
Does a data center employ many people, or is it just racks and racks of computers and air conditioners?
Yeah, it's more the latter. It certainly will employ some folks, but it's not going to be of the volume that, say, an Amazon warehouse, for example, would employ. It's not going to be teams and teams of new folks that are going to be working there, but certainly, it is going to take people to run and maintain those facilities and will result in some hiring.
And a data center is kind of what I described, right? I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I believe it's, racks and racks of computers with air conditioners and information that's loaded to the cloud is stored in those places. Is that it?
Yeah, that's about it. And, the other part of that is, AI systems need lots of computing power, right? So, they need access to these data centers. And, we're seeing lots of AI businesses launch and require lots of investment and lots of computing power. And so, as the AI boom continues to run up, we're going to see more of these data centers and more need for them. And Illinois is certainly looking to hopefully play a major role in being a data center powerhouse.
Yeah, I want you to work on this project for me, Jim. I don't know if I've mentioned this to you before, but I don't have that much computing power on my MacBook here. But I know or on my phone for that matter, I could get the app and I could ask one of these artificial intelligence apps to do something for me, rewrite the Constitution as a lyrical opera in Chinese. And within 9 seconds, there it would be. So when I send out to the world that request, where does that go? How is that information found and assembled? And I presume data centers have something to do with that, but really think about that. Nobody's explained that to us. I'm not sure that it's explainable to us, but I'd love to know literally where does that spark go? And how does it get that stuff before it comes back?
Yeah, I'm probably not the person to totally explain these large language models, these LLMs that the companies create. So I can definitely tell you that they're very sophisticated, and they basically take in a ton of information, really that's throughout the web and all kinds of different sources to kind of create the what you're talking about, the generative AI examples, the rewriting of the Constitution, for example. And, different large language models are training on all different kinds of things. Some train on Reddit forums. Reddit can open up its forums for large language models to train on and get all kinds of data through that, like whether it's training on Google searches, for example, or just the World Wide Web in general. So really what they need is lots and lots and lots of training to refine their language models to create the generative artificial intelligence that you're talking about.
But think about that. Reddit is a good example because that's contemporaneous and it's all kinds of topics and there's pretty good information there, fair enough. But the request I just imagined is not there. So it might go to Reddit and the New York Times and Google and every place else. It still has to do that. And they were originally described to us as these large language models, which were also described as sentence predictors or word predictors. You know, based on the global information that it has access to, what would be the next logical word in this sentence in pursuit of that request? I don't know what I just said, but it's something like that, right?
That's exactly right. And these models are trained to do exactly that. I mean, and that's kind of really the early stages. We were seeing, Microsoft Word and Google Docs being able to kind of do that in kind of the earliest stages of this artificial, generative AI. Now there's going to be, much more sophisticated examples of that. I mean, you can, very kind of quickly get your email polished up with just one click of the button using AI to kind of take what you've written and sort of very quickly rewrite it. We're kind of really headed toward the future of generative AI if we aren't there already.
And the new administration, which you're referring to here, announcing $20 billion to build new data centers, has certainly cozied up to the Silicon Valley, and they've cozied up to him. It sounds to me like maybe the Biden administration didn't have a great working relationship with these either tech companies or these venture capitalists, but Donald Trump seems to. I mean, they've all beaten a path to his door, right?
Yeah, I mean, look no further than, Mark Zuckerberg just the other day, kind of on the Joe Rogan podcast was, talking very glowingly about the Trump administration coming in. And it's certainly an about face from how Facebook and many, technology companies are reacting to, Trump 1.0. So certainly in a sort of miraculous turn of events for the Trump administration, they've, gotten much of the Silicon Valley and technology world to really buy into this new administration and what they're working on. It's pretty remarkable thinking what we witnessed in 2016 to, how the business community, especially technology in Silicon Valley, is warming up to that administration today.
Gosh, it's a miracle. I wonder what happened there. And I must say that the fact that Facebook, Trump and Elon Musk are back on Twitter because Elon Musk now owns Twitter. Facebook also kicked Donald Trump off. And now Mark Zuckerberg goes to Mar-a-Lago, meets with Donald Trump, and a couple days later says, we're going to get rid of fact-checking. And one wonders what sort of deal is being struck here. Maybe not specifically, but in general, what's good for you is good for me. If you're good for me, I'll be good for you. They're scratching each other's back here. So Zuckerberg says that we're not going to do fact-checking anymore, which is a difficult thing to do. But it sounds like what he's saying is not just it's too difficult for us to do, but rather we don't think we should be doing it. We don't think we should be even trying to make sure that accurate information is loaded up on our platform. Therein lies the 180, right?
That's right. And, efforts to kind of censor content in this early days, they ended up, as Mark Zuckerberg explains, censoring folks that should not have been censored. And they've got these, different sort of systems in place and, the different algorithms to detect potentially harmful language and this and that. And so they had all these systems in place to censor content. And what Mark basically explained is that, they ended up having censoring folks that they shouldn't have.
Right.
And so, what that's going to result in now, right, is that, more bad stuff is going to get through the filters. And according to Mark Zuckerberg, they're okay with that as long as they can allow for more freedom of speech for folks who are, putting the content out there that does, not fall out of line. So, boy, we are in a new world in social media, certainly, and it's going to be quite a different online experience tomorrow than it was 2, 3, 4 years ago.
The community of Facebook is going to sort of self-police now, which just makes me scratch my head because it seems to me like speech was relatively unfettered on Facebook anyway. The idea that it was so sanitized that some dissenting views or some awful views weren't getting out there is crap. There was plenty of garbage out there as it is, and now they're saying, oh no, we've been too restrictive. I thought the rub against Facebook was it hadn't been restrictive enough, and now they're not only throwing up their hands saying we can't do it, they're saying we shouldn't even be trying. Okay, that's the end of my editorial today. Talk to me real quick about what's our next story here? Are we going to do flower foods? Is that something you guys are writing about?
Yeah, this is an acquisition. A company they acquired, Simple Mills, as a Chicago startup, launched over a decade ago. This is a business that makes healthier bakery mixes, crackers, cookies. This is a business that just got acquired last week for almost $800 million. This is a real win for Chicago's startup ecosystem. You know, a 10-year journey for this company that won the University of Chicago's startup pinch competition back about a decade ago, and now it's being acquired for $795 million in an all-cash deal. So Flowers, the parent company of a Wonder Bread, for example, and now bringing in Simple Mills' bakery mixes and crackers into its portfolio. So really significant move and news for Chicago startup ecosystem.
Good news for Chicago. Good news from Jim Dahlke, the Director of Communications at Tech Nexus Venture Collaborative. Let's talk next week as well, Jim.
Thanks, Sean.
Let's update you on the business scene in general with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago's downtown office vacancy rate ended 2024 at a record high. According to Cranes, the share of available office space downtown rose to 26.3% during the final 3 months of the year. It's the 10th consecutive quarter that the vacancy hit a record. The data is provided by real estate services firm CBRE. The downtown office vacancy rate climbed nearly 3% in just a year and is up from 13.8% at the beginning of the pandemic. The effects of remote work are mostly to blame as work patterns and workspace needs have changed. A new study ranks Illinois as the 29th best state for entrepreneurs in 2025. The study by Simplify LLC looked at consumer spending growth in the state, regional inflation, new business growth, and job creation. Illinois scored well in all of those areas. The state jumped from 46th in the same survey last year. Nationally, 430,000 new businesses opened each month last year, up 50% since 2019. A record 43% of entrepreneurs are now women. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you, and here we go. And I've got one of the Bears All-Pros for the 2024 season on the phone.
Yes, I am an All-Pro. I'm excited.
And we'll find out what position she plays after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, Chicago Bears All-Pro, sign in, please.
My name is Brandy Johnson. I am the managing partner, co-owner for Classic Cobbler.
Yeah, the Bears kick in a lot of marketing help for their small business All-Pros.
And look for us at more events this year. We're also going to be part of the Choose Chicago First Bites event on January 23rd, so you'll be hearing more about us in the year to come.
And you know, Brandy, just the word cobbler makes my mouth water. Tell us about your business.
Well, we are a family-owned business, and I think one of the things that they mentioned during the selection process is that our endurance and how we've been able to navigate through COVID and through different changes and then still come back.
Yeah, kind of like the Bears did with that season-ending win over Green Bay.
Yeah. What a great way to end the season. Yeah,
the Classic Cobbler comeback included going from a well-known brick-and-mortar in the South Burbs, then COVID came, so they went online for a couple of years, doing festivals and other events, but they're back in a brick-and-mortar in Bronzeville.
We're at 3453 South Prairie.
Part of a very supportive community there.
There are a lot of new businesses, so we all kind of partner together and kind of support each other.
Fantastic. Now, back to my watering mouth, what is Classic Cobbler famous for?
Peach cobbler is our signature dish, so even like during the festivals and things like that, people always knew us by our peach cobbler.
And there's more.
We do cherry, blueberry, mixed berry.
And Brandy, what's the best way to enjoy one of your cobblers?
With ice cream on top. That is the best way.
Brandy Johnson of Classic Cobblers in Bronzeville, congratulations on being a Chicago Bears All-Pro.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
On the food calendar, I think this is a cousin of cobbler. It's National Peach Melba Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Marissa, it's your turn now. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Chicago Theater Week is coming up in February, right?
Yes, February 6th through the 16th, so we're really excited.
So is that when I buy the tickets, or is that when the shows are actually being performed for which I will have the tickets?
That's when the shows are being performed. Tickets are actually on sale right now at chicagotheaterweek.com.
Is the promotion a discount? I mean, there's a full slate of shows any time of the year. Is the deal that we'll get a good deal on these shows?
Oh, absolutely. You're going to get the best deal. We have tickets for $30, $15, or less. And so great accessible prices for the entire family.
So give me some examples of what I'm going to get for $30 or $15.
Yes, you could do anything from your local neighborhood theater, our storefront theater. So we have a Broadway in Bronzeville doing Policy, running numbers. We have Bramble Theater Company doing Race Car. If you're out by Morgan Park Academy, the Beverly Theater Guild is doing 12 Angry Jurors. And it goes on and on. We also have some large houses as well. Goodman Theater is doing Fat Ham. We have Court Theater doing A Raisin in the Sun. We've got Lyric doing Singing in the Rain, and Drury Lane doing Beautiful, the Carole King musical. So yeah. From our storefronts to our large houses, there's opportunities for everybody.
Steppenwolf, Chicago Shakespeare Theater are also on the list. I have not seen Singing in the Rain at the Lyric, but that just sounds really inviting.
Oh, yes. They're actually going to be playing the full orchestra and vocals alongside showing the film. So it's a very unique experience.
So this is like a huge discount on the normal ticket prices, right?
Oh, absolutely. So normal ticket prices, depending on where you're going, you could be paying upwards of $100. And so this is a great opportunity to introduce people to new spaces and to have a theater experience with more people from your circle.
Maybe this is a chance, too, to explore. Like, okay, maybe you've been to Goodman before, but have you been to Theater X, and at the price, this would be a good time to get out. Well, give me some suggestions, some shows or theaters you think might be surprisingly good for those of us who don't normally venture out like that.
Oh, absolutely. So we have up in North Shore, we have Northlight Theater doing The Heart Sellers. This is a story about a family who is moving in a new world and having a new experience. We have Teatro Zanzani included if you want to see more of a variety show and have dinner as well.
Yeah.
The Annoyance Theater, which is doing Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, an improvised musical. So it's kind of if you love that film, something that you can connect film and theater with if you're looking to do that. And then we have some standing companies like the Neo Futurist who do 32-minute plays all in one night, and they involve the audience, and you have some of that improv and
wow.
And comedy as well.
I see the Second City is there as well. So where do we go then? ChicagoTheaterWeek.com, right?
Absolutely. ChicagoTheaterWeek.com has all the promotions and the prices for all the different shows.
ChicagoTheaterWeek.com. Marissa Jones from the League of Chicago Theaters. Well done. Thank you, Marissa.
Thank you.